You're listening to episode 320 of the Building Psychological Strength podcast. I'm your host, Dr. April Seifert. On this podcast, we uncover the information, tools, and techniques to turn our mind into our most valuable asset. Welcome back to the Building Psychological Strength podcast. On this podcast, we explore the very nature of our minds, how they work, and how they shape our life experience. We believe that life is finite and precious. We know that our minds provide a powerful lens through which we experience the world, and we choose to take responsibility for building psychological strength to craft a life experience that's worth living. I'm Dr. April, a social cognitive psychologist and a life design strategist, and I'm so glad you're here. Friends, during this episode, you are going to learn some seriously practical information. I am a self-proclaimed overachiever. I also have perfectionistic tendencies, and I tend to say yes to way too many things. And this means I end up in a situation where there's a lot on my plate. Lots of times I am struggling with ways to be more productive, more efficient. And even though I know better, I turn to some tactics that I know as a cognitive psychologist are not effective and not good for me. So if you're one of those people who struggles with trying to be more productive, who multitasks, maybe you feel like an octopus with eight arms and you're trying to juggle eight different things on a day-to-day basis and you're feeling overwhelmed, this episode is for you. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Nicole Byers. She's a neuropsychologist, a speaker, and the host of the Bold Life podcast. She's also the CEO of Rocky Mountain Neurosciences in Calgary, Canada. She has a PhD in clinical psychology from the University of Saskatchewan, and she's an adjunct research assistant professor with the University of Calgary. She's published articles in professional journals on the topics of brain health and neuroscience. She's also, like me, and like many of us, an ambitious overachiever herself, a self-described neuroscience nerd, and a mom to one very opinionated preschooler who keeps her on her toes. This episode is jam-packed with practical information that you can use to make slight tweaks that have a meaningful outcome for you in order to be more productive and efficient. So let's dive in. Dr. Nicole Byers, I'm so glad that you're here with us for this episode because we're going to be talking about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, one that I think I need to be reminded of on probably a daily basis. So thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Okay, so you specialize and you have deep expertise and knowledge in the topic of basically productivity, how we can get more done and how we can be more, I guess maybe efficient is the right word to use. And it's interesting because it's something that all of us strive for in our lives. Our lives are busy. They're really full. We have a lot of competing demands. But I think what we're going to find by talking to you is that much like many areas of psychology, our gut instinct and what we immediately jump in and think to do sometimes isn't the right tactic for us to take when things get busy.
Yes, absolutely. That is definitely the key point here is that for a number of reasons, our day-to-day lives right now are set up actually to not be that efficient. Like you mentioned, there are so many distractions. There are so many things going on. We live in this culture of busy where we're busy all the time and our brains are go, 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 going. And but when it comes to your brain and how your brain works most efficiently, that's not really the best way to approach our day. So a lot of, like you said, those gut instincts of, you know, if I just work more, if I just try to do more things, if I just try to work harder, aren't always the best strategy.
Yeah, yes. And you know, it's interesting because we talk about a lot on the podcast how, for good or bad, the limitation that we all need to understand that we have is that we are these human animals who are just constrained by our biology. We can only do so much. Yet so many times when we put ourselves in these busy situations or these situations where we have a lot on our plate, we get down on ourselves because somehow we forget that we have limitations. We think we should be able to just continue going. Like we shouldn't have a capacity, or we shouldn't need to rest, or we shouldn't need to slow down. We find ourselves just pushing through. And your perspective is that just like sort of white knuckling and pushing through your day isn't a good strategy. Can you dig in a little bit there? Because that is one of my knee-jerk reactions. That's what I go to when things get really busy.
And I think most of us do, to be fair. I think that's where we go, right? Is I have so much to do. I am just going to sit here at my desk for the next 10 hours and not move until I'm done. And I don't need to sleep and I don't need to eat and I don't need to take my eyes away from my screen. And that's how I'm going to be most productive. But unfortunately, like you said, our brain has these limits. One of those limits is actually how long we can stay focused. And that's really about 60 to 90 minutes. If you're sitting at your desk for longer than an hour or an hour and a half without taking a break, your efficiency is actually going to start to go down. You're going to get more distracted. You're going to be more likely to make mistakes, which just means more work in the long run. So that strategy of I'm just going to sit here and never take a break and never get up from my desk really ends up being a bad long-term productivity strategy.
I think that in and of itself is a huge point, because if you think about the way that our workday is set up, or even people who have gotten really good at like time blocking, we don't think about rest. Mm-hmm. We don't think about, you know, coming up for air and giving ourselves a minute. And we talk a lot about how there's a difference between like sleep and rest. And you're making that great point right now that we need to pepper our day with those moments of rest and taking a break and moving away, or even just context switching to let our mind sort of relax and do something else for a little bit of time. The analogy that I give sometimes is like and I think you'll have an interesting perspective on this, but like if you go to the gym, right, and you're going to work out with either trainer A or trainer B, trainer A is going to, and you're going to do this for 90 minutes, no matter what. Trainer A is going to have you do squats, and that's all you're going to do. You're just going to do squats. And at some point you're like, wow, I'm like really fatigued. I don't know if I can do squats anymore. And they're like, I don't care. Your session is 90 minutes. You need to keep doing squats. Versus another trainer, trainer B, you're going to do squats. And then as your legs start to fatigue out and you need a break from that, maybe you take a break and you do push-ups for a little bit. You're going to do something different. You're still working. You're still like active and you're awake. You're not like sleeping and completely disengaging, but you're allowing your body to do something different. You're allowing your mind to take itself away from that activity and do something different for a little while to context switch. I would love your thoughts on that and like pressure test my analogy. I would love it.
I really like that. That's a great one. I might borrow that going forward. I use the gym and working out as an example for a lot of topics around behavior change, but I really like that idea of you're absolutely right. If we're just doing the same thing over and over again, our brain fatigues. Even at the really basic brain cell level, if you've ever, for example, been trying to come up with someone's name, maybe it's a name of a famous person or someone you know, and you're like, oh man, like I just can't remember it. It's right there on the tip of my tongue. And then 4 hours later, you're driving or you're in the shower and all of a sudden that name comes to you. Right?
Yeah.
What happens in our brains is when we're working too hard on the same thing, if we're spending all this energy trying to think of that one name or that one specific bit of information, actually the surrounding neurons, which are your brain cells, get inhibited, which means it's harder to activate them and find that information. It's like you're overworking that muscle in your brain, right?
What?
So later on, when you're not overworked, just like when you've stopped doing squats, you can use that brain energy again. Those cells are able to be activated. It works again.
This is a perfect example of this is a biological mechanism we're talking about, right? We're talking about something at the cellular level. And, you know, you're hearing this from a neuroscientist. So, you know we can, put some stock in this, but you've got this biological mechanism that is literally making it harder on us to, do a task or continue to do a task. Yet what happens is we think, no, I just need to focus. I just need to, and I hate this word so much. I just need to grind and, grind it out. And I'm like, that's fine. Like you can, let's take an example that's outside of this. You can yell at your stomach all day long for growling because you haven't eaten for 5 hours, but it's not going to stop. It doesn't mean that biologically somehow your body is going to operate differently. But we think about our brains, somehow we don't give them that benefit of being just another organ in our body that has limitations and needs and ways that it functions and ways that it doesn't. We don't give it that credibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And we forget that, just like you said, that we need to treat our brain like any other muscle, and that's going to fatigue and that's going to get tired and that's not going to be at peak performance. I know we, you know, everyone likes to use the analogy of our brains as computers, and that's not exactly right. A computer can run indefinitely as long as it has power, but that's not how your brain works, really. It is a muscle. It is an organ. It needs rest. It needs rest throughout the day. It needs sleep. It needs all these things to recharge.
Yeah, that's so good. Okay. So 16 to 90 minutes at a time, how long of a break would you suggest in there? Let's get tactical. Like, let's say somebody really wants to put this to work. They have a big project coming up. Maybe they're writing something or working on something for their job, and they're trying to put this into action. How long of a break do we need in between there?
It can be pretty short. 5 to 10 minutes is great. It can be, and it doesn't have to be a full break depending on your task. Let me explain that a little bit. So say you're working on something really challenging and you're feeling quite fatigued, you're feeling your energy is down, take a real break, a 5-10 minute break, get up, go do something else. But sometimes that break can be just switching to a different task. So instead of, you know, working on paperwork that's really challenging, I'm going to go make some client calls that don't use the same parts of my brain, those same resources. So I'd say keep an eye on energy levels. That's usually a great indicator. If you're still feeling energized, maybe just switch to something else to refresh your brain. But if you actually need that break, get up, walk around, get some fresh air, whatever you need to do, 5 to 10 minutes is great.
That's awesome. Because so many times people hear these tips and this information, and they think there's no way that would fit into my day. And what you're talking about is such a small investment to make to get such a big reward out of it, to be able to focus and feel like you are performing at the level you want to perform at once you come back from that break.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Okay. So we have this tendency to want to just grind, push through, white knuckle, keep going. We know that's not a good thing. Let's talk about another one. I hear people say this all the time. It's okay because I'm a really good multitasker. I'm really good at multitasking. Dive in there.
Yes. Yeah, I'm like grinning here because I find this hilarious too. It also drives me bonkers, right? When folks say this. And also the other one that drives me bonkers is that we ask for this, right? We put job applications and job postings that are like, must be great at multitasking. And I'm like, why are we advocating for multitasking? Because your brain can't actually multitask the way we think it can. It can't do two things at once when we're doing these complex tasks. What we do is we switch our focus super, super, super fast back and forth. So if I am responding to emails while I'm sitting in a meeting trying to listen, my brain is pulling my focus from the email to the meeting to the email to the meeting to the email to the meeting, back and back and back and back. And that is really inefficient for your brain.
Yeah. And it's not what people think. I mean, we feel when we're in that situation, why is that? Why is it when we're in that chair, that person in the meeting who's checking their email and going back and forth, we feel like we're doing a good job. We feel like we're killing it at that time. But what you're saying is like, we're doing this insane, like context switching between the two places. What's with the like difference in how that situation feels to us? Are we just acclimated, or what is it that leads us to think that we're so good at this? It's just impossible.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think some of it is that every time we stay busy or we switch tasks like that, it gives like a little mini reward for your brain, because your brain says like, oh, look, I'm doing this task. I must be doing something productive. And that's rewarding and reinforcing for my brain, right? So if I feel busy, if I'm always doing something, my brain says, oh, I must be doing the right thing. Let's keep doing this. And then we stay on that path.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting too, because I really love that. We learn those rewards, right? Based on what our society tells us is a good thing to do. You mentioned a great one, job applications, right? You have to be able to show that you can do this activity of multitasking. That's not a real thing, in order to get certain jobs. We praise that so much in people and their ability to almost like, I picture somebody who looks like an octopus. They've got like 8 arms, right? And they're trying to do 8 things at the same time. We praise that in people. And it naturally then, you know, becomes this mental habit that busy is good, or busy is effective, or busy is the desirable thing that we should be doing, and idleness or rest or even single tasking is seen as somehow not as good or a detriment or think something that we need to apologize for.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. I think there are huge social pressures right now for us to feel like we should be doing more. You know, how many times do you ask someone how they're doing and they sigh and they're like, oh, I'm busy, right? Like busy is this new norm where we're always pushing ourselves to do more. And you're just right. I've heard a million times from clients who say, I feel lazy when I take a break. If I sit down and rest, I feel like I should be doing something. It feels uncomfortable. Our bodies aren't used to resting anymore. They want to do something. And that really, when it comes to your brain wants to be as comfortable as possible. So as soon as we start to feel uncomfortable resting, we want to do something. We want to get out of that state, right? So your brain's like, let's go do a bunch of this other work instead of actually resting.
Even if it's not meaningful work, even if it's not driving anything forward toward a goal that means anything to you. It reminds me of one of the most difficult times in my life in terms of like workload and stuff that I had to manage. I don't ever advocate anybody do this. So do not do this just because somehow I survived through it. It was horrible. Right at the end of my graduate program, what you don't realize when you go to get a PhD, and you'll probably smile at this, is that you don't realize how much other people's schedules and your ability to physically get them in a room together at the same time dictates when you're going to graduate.
Yes.
And so I had, I had this dissertation plan and whatever. And as it turns out, I thought I was going to be able to be done by a certain date. Turns out I needed to take another semester. My advisors were moving across the country to different schools at the time. And I thought, oh, well, they aren't going to be in Nebraska where I got my PhD either. So why don't I go, don't ever do this. Why don't I go get a job since they're not going to be there? I'll finish up writing my dissertation while I'm working. No big deal. I didn't realize what that actually would mean because I've never had a real corporate 9-to-5 job before. So I went to this job, which was the most exhausting thing I've ever done because you're sitting at a desk, you know, for 45 hours a week, whatever, 50 hours a week. And then I was trying to write like 8 hours on Saturday, 8 hours on Sunday, hours in the evenings. I was emotionally just unable to regulate at that point. I was just crying at these random times. And here's what was really interesting. Go back to Nebraska, defend my dissertation. That weight is suddenly gone. Like it's not on my plate anymore. And I thought, this is amazing. You know what I'm going to do this coming weekend? I'm going to get done with work. And on Saturday, I'm going to sit and I'm going to watch TV. And it was the most awful experience of my life because I couldn't watch TV like a normal person. I was so used to like going like crazy. It felt in my soul like I was doing something wrong by sitting there watching TV because I wasn't used to it.
Absolutely. Super common experience. Like I said, I know for so many of us, I have been there too. My experience was very similar. Got my first job in a hospital. We were unionized. We only worked certain hours and I had no hobbies because I'd been a graduate student for a million years. And I didn't really know what to do with myself if I wasn't studying or working. And it really does take some time to get our brain out of those habits. And that's what it really is this habit of feeling like I should be busy all the time. This habit of valuing work over the other things that are important for our bodies, like doing things that we like to do, like spending time with family and friends, like sleeping and eating and exercising and all these things that are so, so important for our brain health.
And basic care and feeding of our bodies, right? Like basic care and feeding of our human animal bodies. Yeah. How about some of the other pieces? Like those are the big boulders that come to mind, right? We just try to push, we try to do everything at once, we try to cram it in. But how about some of the societal pieces that also have some wear and tear on us from a cognitive perspective? Things like, you know, distractions with devices and just information coming in, you know, those pieces feel like they're also on top of this, you know, big plate of, I guess, factors that make it more difficult for us to focus and perform. How does all of that play into our productivity?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And you're absolutely right. Technology is a big part of our distractibility right now. You know, before we jumped on this podcast, we shut down all of our email alerts and things, so they're not binging at us, but most of us keep those things open all day, right? So I'm working on this task and then I see an email pop up and I go answer that email and then I try to come back and focus. And when we think about the efforts and the resources that takes from your brain, every time I'm shifting my focus to that email, that's taking energy. I answer the email, I try to go back to where I was before, it's taking me more energy to get refocused again. So every time I'm distracted, that's pulling away my energy, increasing my stress, and really reducing my productivity. And when we have these devices with us all the time, whether we're working on our computer and those emails are popping up, or that phone's right next to you all the time with all those alerts popping up, it's so much distraction. And especially when it comes to apps like social media or games or whatever it is that's on your phone, an important thing I always recommend keeping in mind is that these apps are designed to pull your focus and they're designed to keep you there. They have some really, really smart people working on designing these apps to make them as engaging as possible because they want you to get distracted. They want you to pull their focus and go browse through social media for an hour because that's what makes those companies money. And so they're doing everything that they can to pull you away. And so it takes some effort on our part to set up our day in a way that we're not constantly distracted by some of these tasks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I even think about, like, you know, when we do workshops with companies and, you know, other organizations, we talk a lot about how, you know, our mind has this goal. It wants to get us through the day while expending the least amount of energy possible. Like, how do I just not work very hard? And the reason for that is because the workload of it, in order to process everything, is just, I mean, it's crushing. It's too much information. Something as simple as basic decisions that we make in a day, we back burner them and they become habitual. The way you put your pants on during the day is probably exactly the same. We don't notice it. Shampoo versus conditioner first. We know which one comes first, and it would feel weird if we did it a different way. You know, all of these pieces. But something that's worthwhile for us to have a conversation about is the reason why all of that is in place is because it's helping us avoid something called decision fatigue. Like, we don't have to make any of those decisions. We don't have to actually process them. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and the impact that it has on our performance and just us being able to be engaged with what we're doing?
Yeah, great question. So how I like to explain this is we wake up every day and our brains have a finite number of resources. Every single act we do, every decision we make pulls away some of those resources. Some tasks are easy for our brain. Like you said, they're things that are habits. They pull a lot less resources. I get up, I always go to the washroom, I brush my teeth, I do my hair in this order. All of those require minimal effort for my brain. So they're not pulling very many resources. But we also have a lot of harder decisions that we need to make throughout the day. Things that come up unexpectedly. There is a traffic jam on your way to work and you have to go a different route. That's going to take up a lot of your brain's energy. You have an urgent task at work that you need to get done. That's going to take a lot of your brain's resources to put towards that. And so our brains are slowly running out of resources throughout the day until we sleep again and we have a chance to rejuvenate or recharge or get that rest. And so where we get to this point of decision fatigue is where our brains just don't have enough of those higher level resources left for those decisions. We are spent. And you know you're there if simple decisions seem impossible. If someone, you know, your kids ask you what's for dinner and you get super stressed and anxious about it, like, oh my gosh, I have no idea. I can't even make that choice. That's when we're at that point where we have done too much that day and our brains are saying, enough is enough. I cannot do this anymore.
Oh, that's such a good example. It's a really great example because we do a lot of work with life design in Peak Mind. And one of the things that is part of that is there's a stage at which we just become aware. Like we become brutally honest and aware of, in this case, everything that's going on inside of our day. And there's two sneaky things that we've talked about that people don't maybe put on the list of stuff that's taxing their brain. We think somehow it should just magically happen, or that it doesn't belong on the list. Like things that automatically people would admit to are, I have a big project at work. I have to give a presentation. Maybe I need to do some research for something, whatever. I have to write something. Email is something that I don't think we give enough credibility to as a thing we're doing during the day, like a task in and of itself. Like if you think about your day and you had to schedule time to drain your inbox to the point that you feel like it needs to be by the end of the day, how much time would you have to schedule on your calendar? Truly.
Right.
And the reason why we don't do that is people are like, oh my God, I could never block off that amount of time. The time's going to happen one way or the other. Like you're going to spend it one way or the other. You're just going to do it at the detriment of other things. And so that's one piece. The second piece that I want to highlight, you just went there and it was so perfect. What happens when we get home from work? We don't see our personal lives somehow as contributing to that just cognitive deficit that we end up in by the end of the day. We don't see that as a task. It's like it makes us feel guilty to say, no, being around my 3 and 5 and a half year old is actually really cognitively tasking. It really is. So do you have suggestions for, because most of us, let's just be realistic, we burn ourselves out by the end of the workday. We're like grasping reality at the end of the workday. What are some tips for making that transition? Because at some point, like if you've gassed yourself at the end of the workday, that doesn't mean your kids and your, you know, personal responsibilities and stuff aren't going to be there when you get home. Is there a way that we can sort of recharge or get ourselves back, or things that we can do to make that transition better?
Now, that's a great question.
Not asking for a friend. Totally.
Yeah. Right. Asking. Yeah. One thing I'd recommend is inserting like a window, like a buffer window between work and home. Even if that's something like sitting in your car for 5 minutes when you get home before you go inside, and just giving yourself that mental space to take some deep breaths, to relax, to mentally put on the shelf all those work things that you don't want to deal with anymore. Because often that happens too, right? Is we're coming home and we're still thinking about work and we're still thinking about all these other things that we need to get done. So, you know, giving yourself just even just 5 minutes to take some deep breaths, allow your body to refocus, put those work things on the mental shelf until the next day, and do a little bit of kind of mental preparation for, you know, what am I going to do this evening? What am I going to prioritize for myself? So we can rejuvenate those resources a little bit that way. That can be helpful because we often don't do that, right? We come home, we go in the door, we're still exhausted, we're still thinking. So having that little buffer space is a great way to shift your brain from work mode to home mode, which can rejuvenate some of those resources.
I really like that. I really like that. That's awesome. How about other tips? Like we've mentioned, you know, that we work better when we work in chunks, we need to take breaks, there's these distractions. Like, do you have sort of your like list of quick hits? Like if you were going to do this, some small changes that we can make in the way that our workday goes, or even just like, even if it's not our workday, just in general, the way that we move through our day so that we come out not feeling so gassed at the end of it.
Yeah, that's great. My kind of biggest tip is to find those small ways that you can make life more efficient for your brain. How many things can I make easier? For example, something that I do, I am terrible in the mornings. I am not a morning person. My brain takes forever to get going. I will never be part of the 5 a.m. club. I know that's not me, right? So I know that for me to make decisions first thing in the morning, it's not going to work very well for my brain. So I do things like I set out my clothes the night before. So I don't have to stare at my closet and spend 20 minutes being like, oh my God, I hate everything I own. Nothing's going to look good on me. Right.
Yeah.
I make my lunch the night before as well. So again, it's one less thing I have to do in the morning. I can get up, I can go. So even a little bit of pre-planning in our days, knowing when you're going to have less resources in terms of your thinking efficiency and doing as much of that beforehand or making it as automatic as possible is a great strategy.
That's awesome. I really love that. This is so great. What this is making me think about is just, again, going back to the life design approach is taking this stock of, you just said something so beautifully, like something so that requires a level of self-awareness, right? I'm not part of the 5 a.m. club. I'm never going to be in that club. I am that club, but I'm a pile at 8 p.m. Like complete pile. I can't do anything after, like anything of substance after 8 p.m. And if we spend some time observing how we're feeling throughout the day, I think it can really help us figure out not only what those time windows are, but realistically, are there people who are more draining? Maybe they take more emotional intelligence from us to think about how we're going to communicate with them, or maybe just their position in our lives, like hierarchically within our job or something else, requires us to think hard about that or about how we communicate. Or maybe they're just a more demanding person. And we know historically when they email, it's going to be more of a fire drill kind of thing. Like it's embedded in what you were saying is this level of self-awareness that if we spend some time thinking about how we're feeling and how we feel like we're performing moment to moment, can we diagnose what those things are uniquely for us that are zapping our ability to be productive? And just, it is, it's a performance thing, right? Yeah. Like how do we get down to being able to set ourselves up so that we're at our best throughout the day? What are those unique factors?
I really love that you pointed out there too, kind of paying attention to how we're feeling, because often our bodies will give us those first signs, right? I don't really notice that I'm stressed and overwhelmed, but my body starts to feel it. I'm sluggish. My stomach's bugging me. My shoulders are in giant knots. They're up to my ears all the time. Often our bodies will show us these signs first, especially if we have that tendency to be a bit of a workaholic, a recovering perfectionist. We often ignore a lot of those feelings and those signs that our brain is trying to give us. So our body will start to show us. That's a great first step.
Well, and I love that you went there too, because for people, you know, we like to call them people of high responsibility, people who just have a lot and they do a lot and there's a lot to manage. It's interesting because you tend to go to your head more quickly. How do I get this done? Like, what is the task list? What is the series of steps? You're not listening to your body saying, can I take this on right now? Or is this something that's even meaningful to me that I want to do? So I know for me, like a big issue that I need to think about constantly, work on constantly. It is not a habit. It doesn't come easily. It can wreak havoc in my life. Is this notion of I hear a task or I hear a request from somebody, I immediately think about, okay, how would I get that done? Yes, I can think about the steps that it would take. So obviously it must be a yes for me.
Right.
I don't even listen to my body that is screaming at me, you're not even interested in that. And there's nothing in it for you. Why are you saying yes? And I'm like, shh, my brain's going, you know, we get so caught up in our head and we don't listen to ourselves when it's a clear no, if we listen to our body.
Yeah, that's a great point. I have a mentor that says that she's training herself that her first response is always no. And then she has to talk herself into saying yes. Ooh. For that exact reason. It's like, no, everything is always a no until she gets in tune with her priorities and her body and says, do I actually want to do this?
Yeah, I really like that. That's an awesome tip. Mm-hmm. I actually need to write that down, and that needs to be like the screensaver on my phone or on my computer, because that should completely be my, way of approaching most things, especially these days in my life. I love it. I would love to know from your background and the work that you do, what's your definition of psychological strength?
For me, a psychological strength really is a form of resilience. And let me explain a little bit about what I mean by resilience. For me, that is being able to accept that sometimes things in life happen. Sometimes things happen around us. Sometimes we have hard times. Often things are struggles. And for me, resilience is being able to take that experience and not take it personally, not as I'm a failure or I messed up or I didn't do this right, but instead being able to say, okay, this thing happened. What can I learn from this experience? And so for me, that psychological strength really comes down to being able to separate the things that are happening around us from who we are as a person, because often we get into that trap, right, of taking things very personally and being so hard on ourselves, which really holds us back from moving forward.
That was so good. Separate what's happening with who you are as a person. It's so hard to do, but it's one of those things that if we practice it, you know, free throw practice over and over and over, that is some muscle memory that we could really benefit from developing, as was everything that you talked about in this episode. It was awesome.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about where we can find you if we want to learn more?
Yeah, probably best place is to go to my website. It's drnicolebyers.com. I have links to my blog and my podcast on there as well, and also a number of free resources, including one that I think would be great for folks who like this episode. I have a daily productivity checklist, and it walks folks through just what we've been talking about, how I set my day up for success, often in advance, and some of those things that I do the night before to save some of those mental resources and make my day more efficient. That's just drnicolebyers.com/checklist to download that.
I love it. That's such a good resource. That's amazing. There are so many rabbit holes we could go down with this. There's so much, just a wealth of value in everything that you've given us. I'll make sure that I give a few additional resources in the next segment of the show, but this has just been fantastic. Nicole, thank you so much for being with us. I just really appreciate it.
Well, thanks again for having me.
All right. And I'll be back in just a moment with a few thoughts on my conversation with Nicole and also a few ways that you can go a bit deeper if you want to dive into this topic, a few resources for you. So we'll be right back. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Nicole Byers. You know, as she was speaking, there were so many directions that my mind was going, which is kind of funny given the topic that she was talking about. But one that I want to hit on is another reason why decision-making can be really difficult for us. So Nicole talked a lot about decision fatigue and just cognitive overwhelm, and that is such a real topic and such a real inhibitor to us being able to move forward, make good decisions, and actually feel like we have some bandwidth at the end of them. But there's a second one that I want to highlight, and I'm going to give you a few resources in order to dig in deeper. This is what has been called the paradox of choice. So what we find in psychology is that when we have to make a decision, lots of us feel like we want to have a lot of options to choose from. We want to be able to sift through lots of options. So we like things like Amazon because it feels like there's a lot of options there. Or we like Netflix because there's a ton of options there for us to watch. As it turns out, what we find is that when we're faced with a decision to make and we have a lot of options on our plate, it's actually harder for us to make the decision. And no matter what we pick, we're less satisfied with the outcome. It's this crazy paradox of choice. And there's some depth in it. And so I'm going to give you a couple of resources that you can use and go to if you want to learn a little bit more. The first one is a blog post that my partner in Peak Mind, Ashley Smith, wrote. And it's called, Why is this decision so hard to make? How to overcome indecisiveness? And in that blog post, she talks about the paradox of choice and why it's so difficult for us to choose and why we're unhappy afterward when we have a lot of choices. She also gives some really good practical tips in that blog post. So I'm not going to dive into it here, but if you're curious about that topic, scroll down on your mobile device or visit this show notes page. You can find a link to that podcast or to that blog post in this episode description. The second thing I want to talk about is a TED Talk by Patrick McGinnis. It's called How to Make Faster Decisions. And he highlights a similar situation. He has a really cool name for it, though. We've all heard about FOMO, or fear of missing out. I think he's the guy who actually coined that term. He actually coined another term called FOBO, so F-O-B-O, or the fear of better options. So you can see how this links to the paradox of choice, right? The more options we have, the more we start to worry if we've picked the right one, quote, right one, or quote, best one, because there are so many other options out there. And what if one is better than what we chose? We're trying to optimize. Now, I bring all this up because if you think about what all of that extra processing to sort through all of those options and to try to make sure that we're choosing the best one, think about how much cognitive processing goes into that. And we talked to Dr. Byers about how, you know, already we're inundated with information. Already we are gassed at the end of the day, and we're finding ourselves having a hard time making decisions toward the end of the day. here's just another factor that plays into it with some really good tips in these resources about what you can do from there. And the last thing that I want to highlight is when Dr. Byers was talking about what she does, sort of that buffer point in between when you finish up your professional day, if you're somebody who works in, you know, a typical job, or so when you finish up your professional day and you're going to come home, that buffer time and what you can do. I want to offer up one other example of something that I've found to be extremely helpful for myself, as I am one of those people who will sit and ruminate and go through the list of things that needs to be done, and it'll end up ruining my evening. So one of the things that I do during that buffer time is I get out my self journal. Again, bestself.co has this amazing journal called the Self Journal. I use it every morning to plan out my day. But what I've started doing is what I've found is in that buffer time at the end of my day, there are always loose ends that just couldn't be tied up during the day. There are things I want to not forget to do the next day, or, you know, ideas that I don't want to forget because I want to work on them the next day. That self journal has become sort of the brain dump repository for everything that tomorrow's April needs to know from me right now, so that I can get it out of my mind, I can make sure it's in a safe place, and I know that the April of the future, April tomorrow, has a good solid jumping off point for what I wanted her to know as I finish up my day-to-day. Being able to sort of psychologically set that load down has really helped me be more present and more engaged with my family and with my kids at the end of the day, especially when I've had an extremely crazy day. So just something to keep in mind, something to be aware of as another sort of practical tip that you can put in that buffer time between when your professional day ends and when it's time to go back and be with your family. So just again, today we heard from Dr. Nicole Byers, and we talked about brain hacks and tips that we can use to boost productivity. Thank you so much, Nicole, for such an incredible conversation. Again, if you want to learn more about Nicole's work, you can visit her website, drnicolebyers.com. That's also linked below. And I want to thank each and every one of you who has left us a rating or a review on iTunes. If you haven't done that yet, I would so appreciate it if you would. And finally, as we close out, let's remember that time is the most non-renewable resource on the planet. And I'm grateful to each and every one of you who chose to spend some of your precious time with me today. I'm Dr. April Seifert, and I'll see you next week.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.